back with you on the Panthers podcast. This is Max Henson and Brian Strickland here as always. And Brian, has that heart rate finally calmed down after that thrilling win over the Vikings?
Let me take a shower first, Max, and then it'll calm down a little bit. Okay, people are like, what is he talking about? By the way, I have taken a shower since Sunday.
In case anybody
was wondering, I think you'd be able to tell if
I hadn't,
Max. But no, I guess James Bradbury after the game, that was a question on the quote sheet. Like, we had these quote sheets after the game. We can't be at every locker all the time. And there it was right there on the quote sheet, somebody asking him that exact question that you asked me. And that was his response: it will after I take a shower. So I thought I'd play along. I mean, he had a great game. You know, I want to have a great week. So let's go with it.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting to see show up in the quote sheet. First time I'd ever seen any player kind of say it in exactly those words afterwards, but it did kind of speak to kind of how heart racing things got throughout that game, and obviously towards the end. I mean, this was a crucial game for Carolina and for Minnesota. I mean, you're talking about two teams and the playoff picture right now, all the implications, all that, and this was a game that the Panthers had played really well in to get themselves a nice lead in the second half, and that withered away. We had a tie game, 24-24, and you know how it is. In those moments, it gets tense, and it's a lot of pressure, and there's a lot of anticipation. And so it was cool to see or to hear and see that James Bradbury was kind of just like the rest of, the rest of us. I mean, he was pretty tense throughout those final stages of the game as well.
Yeah, I thought it was a tense week, too. I mean, we're in December, so every game matters. But I think we joked, but I don't know how much we were joking. Like, this is the season. Like, it started to feel like, you know, you need to win this Minnesota game to feel good about the playoffs with everything that was happening around the Panthers. And kind of the one thing I forecast that didn't happen, but otherwise it went well, was for the Packers to get knocked off by the Browns. And it looked like it was going to happen. Right?
It was close.
And then we've heard that before with the Browns. They always win a game, so I thought that was going to be the one. But, you know, obviously we'll get into that later, but that sets the stage for, you know, probably Aaron Rodgers and the Packers coming to town this week. But I know we want to start, of course, with that Vikings game. And, I mean, you already mentioned it, Max. You know, got kind of hairy at the end there, as we've seen before. But, you know, The defense gets a lot of credit for me for kind of saving the day with the way they made the goal line stand, so to speak, after Cam Newton was picked off to force the Vikings to just settle for a field goal, which kept the game tied. And then, you know, guys talked about it. Like, they actually said that was a momentum shifter big time, and it kind of propelled the offense. And then Cam certainly propelled the offense with this 62-yard run right after that to set up the game-winning touchdown.
It kind of does speak to – at times what it is like the fickle nature of momentum, right? Because the game is 24-21 for Carolina.
Right.
When Cam Newton tries to check it down to Christian McCaffrey, ball pops off his hands and it's intercepted by the Vikings. They're set up with first and goal at the 6-yard line. So it's like, boom. All right. Well, for the Vikings standpoint, momentum's in their favor.
Yeah.
This is trouble for Carolina. But then, as you mentioned, a huge sudden change stand in the red zone area, deep in their own territory for Carolina, to force the Vikings to settle for a field goal there. They tie the game at 24-24. Could have been much worse. Vikings could have taken the lead at that standpoint. But then it's like, okay, as you just mentioned, momentum a little bit back in Carolina's favor because Minnesota wasn't able to take full advantage of that. And then, as you mentioned, the play of the game, Cam Newton's 62-yard run off that zone read when, as we've been talking about, everybody was pretty tense in that stadium wondering how is this going to unfold, and that play just massive. And against that defense, which we talked about last week on this show, how tough they were, how really strong Carolina was going to have to play really their best football offensively in order to move the ball against this defense. You look at the end of it, they score 31 points, which I didn't necessarily see coming.
Yeah, I don't think that any team has done that against the Vikings.
Yeah, to score 31 points and that 62-yard run. Earlier in the game, there was a 60-yard touchdown run by Jonathan Stewart. I mean, teams just don't do that against this Vikings defense. But in that moment, with so much on the line, to come up with that kind of play, and obviously the juke on Sendejo was just phenomenal.
Right.
That's Cam. I mean, that's what he does. That's what he brings. And obviously, the Panthers were able to finish that off with a touchdown and ultimately walk out of there with a 31-24 win.
Yeah, it was a strange feeling at the end, Max. I mean, it felt like the Panthers were in control pretty much the whole game, and especially in the second half. I mean, after they came out to start the second half up 14-13 again because of the defense making a stand and holding the Vikings to a field goal at the end of the half to protect the lead, and then the great drive to kick off the second half – capped off with the Funchess touchdown, right? That's the one to kick off the second half.
Yeah, and another one of those examples of Cam doing what he does that not many other quarterbacks in this league can do. I mean, what a tremendous play to somehow avoid that sack. He's backpedaling. And again, this was something that, you know, we talked about with Mike Shula earlier this week, kind of breaking the rules that are set in place for quarterbacks. You know, you shouldn't be throwing off your back foot, shouldn't be throwing across your body. Cam Newton does both those things, and he zips it up and over the Vikings linebacker Eric Kendricks into the hands of Devin Funchess' 18-yard touchdown. Yeah. So, I mean, that's just one of those special Cam Newton plays that leads to a huge score. That was on 3rd and 7 down in the red zone area. And I mean, some great plays in that game on both sides.
Yeah, then the defense does the job after that. Gano kicks a field goal. It was a 2-score game, and it just kind of stayed there. The defenses do what the defenses do. Both of them, you know, forcing 3 and outs, punts. And it just, I mean, as much as it can, it kind of felt like the game was in hand as we went to, what was it, the final 7 minutes or so, still 24-13. And then here come the Vikings. Case Keenum was impressive all day.
He really was.
But, you know, again, the defense usually did the job when it mattered most. And then, boom, he hits Adam Thielen on a huge play, 52 yards. I think at that point the longest play that the Vikings had was 22 yards. He gets into the end zone. They get the 2-point conversion. The Cam interception, the field goal. Wow, it almost didn't seem real to me, like that it was actually tied. I don't know. I felt like it was a victory in hand, and obviously Cam and Jonathan Stewart certainly came to the rescue. Maybe a field goal would have won it. It felt good to get that touchdown from
sure
Stewart.
It
felt really good, like, given the situation. Like, the Vikings pretty much knew in this situation the Panthers are going to run the ball, and they ran it 3 straight times. No negative plays. You know, Stewart gaining yards on all 3 of those and gaining the end zone on the last one. And then the defense, we talked about momentum, continuing that momentum. I mean, obviously the Vikings back very much against the wall at that point, but they still have time. They have a timeout. The defense didn't give them a chance. I mean, Case Keenum, the escapability he had all day, they bottled it up. I think that there was a sack by Kaywon Short to start it out.
Kaywon Short sack on the first play of that possession, which was huge. It's huge to start off that way. Doesn't it feel like the first play of those kind of drives are a big indication of kind of how it's going to unfold, right?
Yeah.
If the offense gets like a, you know, let's say they just throw a simple check down pass, running back escapes from maybe a 12, 15-yard gain, then they're on the move, they maybe hurry up to the line, and it just kind of sets the tone for how that drive might play out. Instead, on the flip side, Carolina comes up with that sack from Kaywon Short for a loss of 5 yards, sets the Vikings offense back, and they couldn't recover from it. It was became 2nd and 15, 3rd and 15, 4th and 15, incomplete pass.
Yep.
So just a huge defensive stand. Speaking of KK, on that sudden change stand we talked about earlier, he was also a huge factor in that, coming up with a sack on 3rd and 6.
Right.
So talking about a guy who's obviously one of the better defensive tackles in this league. He hasn't had too many, you know, opportunities to bring quarterbacks down this year. He's getting a lot of attention from opposing offensive lines, but his first 2-sack game of the year, and those couldn't have come at a bigger time for Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, a good day for him, very much a good day. A good day pretty much across the defensive line. I believe it was 6 sacks for the team.
It was,
Mario Addison was in there. Peppers was in there. Did he get he got a sack in addition to the one that was kind of taken away by a little bit of a technicality, or did he not have one? I'm trying to remember.
Well, there's the one that we all agreed was Peppers' sack, but they actually credited it to Kyle Love because Keenum, they had ruled, had kind of like stayed up on his feet. I mean, as we look at the game book here, Julius Peppers did have 1 sack
right.
He was credited for, and we all agreed probably should have been credited.
Yeah, he in effect had two, so Addison and
that
and
huge
Peppers
play by Addison,
the
too,
done.
The strip sack. And Mario Addison, how consistently productive he has been pretty amazing.
That was
me.
A strange play, by the way, live, and of course the Panthers reacted this way too. It was like, there's no way that's a fumble. You don't see a, what was it, 15-yard fumble very often.
Yeah, but usually when those strip sacks happen, the ball kind of flutters out. Looked kind of almost like a pass at first glance, but. And this is what coaches are always telling those guys to do in practice. When you see a ball on the ground, they're always telling them to pick it up. And that's kind of a great example of why. When you get a look at that replay, you can clearly see Addison hits the ball as he's trying to throw. It's a fumble.
Yeah.
And credit Mike Adams for picking it up. And so, all across the board, some really good contributions for Carolina. Before I go any further, I do want to mention we've got a guest today, Josh Norris from NBC Sports and Roto World, a big friend of the podcast, is going to be joining us in a little bit to help us break down this Vikings win and look ahead to this next upcoming match against the Packers. But a couple other guys I want to talk about in that Vikings game, Brian. The Khalil brothers.
Yeah.
This was a big game for them. We haven't talked about either of them yet. Let's start with Matt. Obviously, former team going up against them for the first time. A lot has been talked about as far as his play is concerned all year. Is he living up to the contract? Is he living up to expectations? I thought that was quite a response and a performance from Carolina's left tackle.
Yeah, it was the biggest day for the Khalil family, I think, since that game in Minnesota with their sister sang the national anthem. You remember that?
I do remember that.
That was like quite the family affair.
2012? That was a while ago now.
Obviously, Matt and Ryan were on opposite sides that day. But yeah, I mean, Matt Khalil played it mostly close to the vest this week when he was asked about playing his former team. You know, he did bristle a little bit someone mentioned him going against Everson Griffin. Like, I was there. Like, nobody said anything negative, as if to suggest that Griffin was going to get the best of him. And he was pretty defensive. Like, hey, they're going to see a different Matt Khalil. You know, I'm healthy now. And I think he responded to that challenge. Griffin, yeah. Maybe did he have a sack?
He got on the board with a sack. It was a 2 yard loss sack, yeah. Kind of. So Cam scrambling but he also was penalized for the face mask right. In that play, so it ended up being a positive gain for Carolina.
Yeah, that was part of the plan, right? That's that's what he was thinking there. No, right. But he, we didn't talk about Matt Khalil too much during the game, and as he talked about during the week, that's pretty much an ideal scenario for a left
tackle.
Sure
is, that yep.
Usually when you hear their name, it's because something has not gone well. You did not hear Matt Khalil's name very often on Sunday. And the same thing for Ryan Khalil as well, because, I mean, he played great. He played every snap. But there was a point late in the game where it was like, oh, look, there's Ryan Khalil. Like, there were no, obviously, setbacks injury-wise for him that caught your eye. You know, he was directing that line. You know, Coach Rivera talked about the confidence that his presence brings. Certainly, Tyler Larson's done a great job. But it just, like, kind of – I'm sure there's just, like, was a feeling in the huddle, you know, like, Ryan's back, let's roll type thing. And then, of course, Ryan's confidence for himself built as the game went on, no doubt.
Yeah, Ryan Rivera said he thought Ryan got better as the game went on, which, of course, was great to hear because we know the last time Ryan got out there and tried to give this a go in Week 7, against the Bears, it only lasted a few series. So to see that he was able to hold up and not only hold up but get stronger as the game went on, I think is really encouraging. And look, Ryan Khalil, he plays a center position. Really, those guys, other than the left tackle on the offensive line, don't get much attention. They're not talked about all that much. But he's just such a huge figure on this team, you know, in that locker room as a leader, a five-time Pro Bowler. And it's been really tough on him to not be able to be out there as Carolina has gone through this run. We'd be remiss if we didn't give some credit to Tyler Larson for kind of, right. You know, holding things down while Ryan was out. I mean, that's a tough spot to throw an inexperienced guy in it. And the way he played was really, really admirable. But Ryan is Ryan, you know, and to have him back out there and to really just see the look on his face in that locker room afterwards, to be able to kind of pull the pads off after playing four quarters of football for the first time in a while, that was pretty cool to see. And obviously this Panthers team is going to benefit from it hugely if they can continue to get Ryan out there week in and week out.
Yeah, and I mean, you have veterans on this team for a reason, guys that have been there and done that. It was kind of a day for them, you know, a good day for them setting up as we get closer to the playoffs. Jonathan Stewart, we've mentioned him briefly, but obviously a 100-yard-plus game with a 60-yard run. 3 touchdowns, first time in his career. He's had 3 yeah. rushing touchdowns in a game. That's pretty crazy. You look at the defensive side of the ball, obviously, you know, Thomas Davis seemed healthier, back to kind of what he's doing after maybe yep. being a little beat up the previous week. We mentioned Peppers already. So it's just kind of, you know, that rounding into shape thing. You want to peak at the right time. I don't feel like this team has peaked.
Maybe how about those corners? Check off these boxes. We came into this week, and even, you know, Bill on our site wrote the story about what's happened at these Avs. No interceptions by a cornerback all year. Well, it was like, well, that drive's going to have to end eventually. Sure enough, an interception by both Bradbury and Worley against yep. the Vikings. So you can check those boxes off. I wanted to go back. You mentioned Stewart and his 3 touchdowns. Just the running game in general, I feel like, especially this time of year, it's critical. They racked up, let's say one more look so I get the number right, as far as rushing yards against this Vikings defense.
I'm going to go with 216.
Yeah, 216 rushing yards, good memory, Brian, against this Vikings defense. They were the number 2 rush defense in the NFL coming into this game, only giving up 77 per game. And it was an incredible day on the ground. And this is coming from an offense. It wasn't that long ago we were talking about how is this team going to get positive yards in the run game,
right.
let alone 216.
Right.
How are they going to avoid having Jonathan Stewart get stopped in the backfield on negative plays on first and second down? And so I looked this up myself as well, but in the last 5 games for Carolina, rushing the football, average 196.
Wow.
I mean,
yeah.
it's That's incredible. And again, I'm just going to go back to what we were experiencing from watching this Panthers offense just a few weeks ago. I mean, that Detroit game, the Philly game, where it was, man, this team hadn't seen them struggle to run the ball like they had
right
in that part of the year. And now look at them.
Yeah, and I think fifth in the league in rushing now. I mean, I still hear chatter, and I guess I understand it about consistency in the running game, you know. But, you know, oh, it was just a couple of big plays, you know, otherwise they didn't do that much. But look what it's adding up to. I mean, it doesn't really matter how you get it. I mean, you know, you get 200 yards. It doesn't matter if you got 7 yards on, I can't do the math on that, 30 carries, 7 yards per carry, or whether you do it like the Panthers do. Because, and again, the true bottom line is that type of success is adding up to wins. I think that's 5 of 6 now for the team. Maybe 4 or 5 with 200 yards plus on the ground. Those things correlate regardless of whether, you know, Christian McCaffrey is consistently gaining 6 yards a carry on inside runs, or, you know, however it's happening, it's adding up to success.
Yeah, I know some people want to, you know, are going to want to see more from the passing game, but, you know, look, with the wide receiver situation being what it is right now, obviously they're getting great production from Devin Funchess, but they've got a lot of younger, inexperienced guys in there. Greg Olsen trying to get himself back healthy. You hope that kind of comes around. But to be able to lean on that run game right now, especially this time of year, is huge. One last thing I want to mention before we get to our guest. I don't think we necessarily talked about this on the podcast, Brian, last week, but we were both kind of talking about it amongst ourselves in the office or whatever, about a kind of a good feeling about that Vikings game. And, you know, again, we didn't put it on the record, really, but I just wanted to go back to that quickly because a lot of people didn't expect this from the Panthers coming off that Saints loss. The pick'ems, we've referenced a couple times on this show, clean sweep for the Vikings across the board. But, I mean, what we were talking about this game coming into it that gave you kind of a belief factor for
Carolina? I mean, it's a big part of it is how this team plays after losses. I mean, especially coming back home, they've been on the road for a little while. You could just hear it in their voices after the Saints game. That was not Panthers football. You know, we're going to bounce back. You could feel it during the weekend practice. And, you know, again, like, you know, some people say, well, these numbers don't matter. They've happened in the past. But there's a reason it has happened in the past, and I just spoke to those. Like, the Panthers now have won 5 of their last 6 home games coming back from a loss, whether that loss was at home or on the road. You know, another thing about that, the Vikings.
The Vikings' perspective was the one for
the Vikings had never won 3 road games in 3 consecutive weeks in franchise history. They had that opportunity after a couple of pretty impressive ones. You beat Detroit on Thanksgiving, winning at Atlanta. They were going for 3 in 3 weeks. But, that's got to be a strain on a team.
Completely, yeah. You pointed that out in your story earlier in the week. And once I saw that, I was like, you know what? It just seems like Minnesota is kind of just due for a game where they're maybe not at their best. You know, 3 straight weeks on the road. You know, the previous 2 games, they're at Detroit. They won by a touchdown. Then they were at Atlanta. They won by another 1-score game. Then they got to come to Carolina again, the third leg of that 3-straight road game trip. And look, if I'm a Vikings fan, I come away from that game saying, you know what? You know, we made a bunch of mistakes. Kind of fed into this Panthers victory. We were right there at the end.
Right.
I'd feel pretty good about that Vikings team going forward. I mean, they outgained Carolina. And again, you got to give the Panthers credit for forcing some of those mistakes. But it just did kind of seem like that Vikings team that had won 8 in a row, maybe it was about time that they weren't going to have their best stuff. And obviously for the Panthers, it couldn't have come at a better time to take advantage of it.
Yeah, they were just a little bit off, obviously. You know, again, you're right. I mean, I think the Vikings are still a major threat in the NFC as we go forward, especially if they end up at home. I mean, which is still entirely possible. And by the way, the Super Bowl is in Minnesota.
Yeah, maybe this Panthers team will see this Vikings team again. We'll see. All right, let's get Josh Norris's thoughts here. Let's bring Josh into the Bose guest line. Josh again from NBC Sports and RotoWorld. Josh, thanks for joining us, man.
What's up, stranger? How you doing?
Josh, obviously want to get first your thoughts coming out of this victory over the Vikings here. Obviously, this was a Minnesota team that was coming in on an absolute roll, one of the best teams in the NFL, and I still think they are coming out of this game. But do you feel any differently about the Panthers after they were able to come out with this 31-24 win?
Well, I feel differently about the Panthers since they made that big move right before the trade deadline, right? And I think we can kind of point to that move kind of pushing this offense in the direction it's going now. There's just been, and maybe not a game-to-game basis, but from the sample size that we've seen now, which is much larger than, you know, week-to-week, we see that the offense is improving, whether it be, you know, Cam being allowed to run the football more on design plays, whether it be, in my opinion, Devin Funchess being used in the appropriate manner now, whether it be, you know, Jonathan Stewart having a great game after one of his worst performances a few weeks ago, or Christian McCaffrey winning on contact more often. And that's just on the offensive side of the ball, right? But I think, you know, for the large portion of the season, the offense is where the questions have been. And hopefully now they are finally finding their identity like they did, you know, two seasons ago.
Yeah. So, Josh, I mean, you think the trade really is the, I think it's one of several reasons why the offense has kind of seemingly found itself. But you think it's a pretty big one, obviously, that removing Kelvin from the equation and putting Devin at that X spot. And obviously, everybody was immediately going to look at how that was going to impact the passing game. But Ron had talked about the fact that he thought that was going to open up the run game. And you really can't argue with the results the past 5 weeks. I mean, we just talked about it. And they're averaging almost 200 yards a game on the ground. Do you really think that that trade is kind of what kind of opened the door for all that?
I do, mainly for Devin, right? And this is why. And I'll have to bring up some names, you know, that are no longer with the team. But that's just how we have to, you know, proceed with this conversation. How Dave Gettleman and I think Ron in some instances discussed Devin Funchess and the Kelvin Benjamin combination in the past was Devin having yards after catch skills. And to me, that was honestly a misevaluation. Not that, I mean, okay, from this perspective, he was better than Kelvin in that area, but I would never call Devin a yards after catch receiver, right? So now that he's used in more areas where he wins, and in a role that might be more fitting and more comfortable for him, I think that that helps his game. And when we think about it, right, I mean, Devin is a young player in this league, and I really liked him coming out of school. I had my reservations once, you know, there was some hype about when he could impact in his first two seasons, but now we're seeing it. I mean, I went back and looked. He's younger than 5, 6, 7, 8 receivers that were just drafted this past April.
Yeah.
Like, he's younger than Cooper Kupp. He's younger than Kenny Galladay. He's younger than a number of these players. And so I think we kind of lose sight of that once a player is almost halfway through their rookie contract and think that they have, you know, improved as much as possible. But that's not true. And I think we're just seeing Devin really emerge. But again, It's the focus is trying to find a second option in this passing game, whether it's going to be a healthy Greg Olsen, whether Demir Byrd continues to progress, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking outside the running back group here. But what we've seen from Devin Funchess has been really, really good stuff, obviously.
All that being said, Josh, were you still surprised by the success the Panthers had against that Vikings defense in the running game, especially with Greg Olsen? I mean, for the most part, being a non-factor, he didn't have a catch.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you can point to, obviously, two big plays as the game changers. And big plays are one of, like, the four pillars to winning a football game, right? It's pass protecting with five. It's rushing the passer with four. It's creating big plays. And it's coming out on top of the turnover differential.
Yeah.
And they did both. They did both of the last two, if I'm remembering correctly. What we're talking about here with those two big plays is the long Jonathan Stewart run that was just blocked perfectly, right?
Right.
And sometimes, you know, I get frustrated in third and short situations, fourth and short situations, when offenses want to cram everything within like a 7-yard box.
Yep.
And just bank on offensive players accomplishing their assignment and blocking a play perfectly. And it worked in that one, obviously, and when everyone is. And this is why in many cases, I believe LaDainian Tomlinson used to talk about this when he used to discuss like 8 or 9-man boxes, that he actually enjoyed running against them, because if everything is blocked appropriately and you make one man miss, then you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a touchdown. And we saw it on that play. Meanwhile, on the keep by Cam, I mean, that design was impeccable. It was perfect in terms of the pre-snap shift that made the safeties shift in the back half. Then they ran it to a side that was not covered up in terms of allowing Matt Khalil to kick out a block on Anthony Barr. And then Cam just had to make the safety, who started, you know, 7, 8, 9 yards back, and then try to move up and make a tackle on a player who's pretty good in the open field. And then, you know, it's just a unique player that they have in Cam Newton that can, you know, produce that kind of a play at a position that rarely does it. So the design in that play really, really created a numbers advantage, and the team made it work. And I think one note quickly is just the blocking has been better in the running game, I think, and I believe we all can say that.
And there's no doubt about that. And Ron mentioned that as his Monday presser as well. Look, Josh, obviously this is a marquee matchup when you've got this Vikings team coming to town, and obviously right now the NFC playoff picture is very much just a bit of a jumbled mess in a good way. I mean, there are a lot of teams kind of vying for positioning here. But just kind of where do you see the Panthers in this mix right now, stacking them up against what's out there in the NFC? And obviously it's constantly changing with the Wentz injury in Philly, with Minnesota coming off this loss, and New Orleans, Atlanta. I mean, just kind of where do you see them in that whole mix?
Yeah, and I really have no idea, to be honest. Like, I think all of these teams have a legit chance. Maybe not so much the Eagles anymore, just because of, you know, and we saw it firsthand watching that Eagles game. Carson Wentz makes so much happen when structure goes out the door, right? He's magic in that area, and I highly doubt that Nick Foles can rise to that same occasion and produce that same magic.
Yeah,
but,
different kind
I mean,
of
just
quarterback.
Look in the
for
NFC,
sure.
Just look in the NFC South, right? I mean, Atlanta and New Orleans all have teams that have talent on both sides of the ball. But where I kind of need to pinpoint this is you look at the contending rosters in the NFC and you try to find major weaknesses that can be exploited and attacked at certain points on their football team. For New Orleans now, I would say it's potentially their pass rush outside of Cameron Jordan, right? Obviously, they are getting healthier in the back half, and that really helps. And Atlanta, I wouldn't say it's anyone in specifically roster-wise, but obviously the coaching and the offensive game plan hasn't been what it was to last season. Right. What I'm basically saying here is everyone has a chance. Yeah. Carolina certainly has a chance. And that this team, to me, in many ways, offensively has changed so much in the last 5, 6, 7 weeks that that's only a good thing in terms of hitting their stride exactly when you want to, which is quite different than it was in 2015. But maybe they can reach that point in week 16 or week 17.
Yeah, Josh, as we look at those standings, obviously the Packers are a team that is on the outside looking in currently, but kind of kept hope alive with what they were able to eke out the last couple of weeks. And you know, the presumption is that it's going to be Aaron Rodgers coming in here to Charlotte on Sunday. Are the Packers a team that can get back in it? And I guess specifically, you know, what do you think will happen Sunday if Aaron Rodgers is back in particular?
I don't think they can get back in it because just they are so weak on the defensive backfield. And I think that's just a major weakness. And they are getting healthier up front. Like Kenny Clark missed a couple games. Clay Matthews missed a couple games. But it's a testament to that team and that coaching that they've been able to stay in the hunt with the type of offensive game plan they've been putting out there. I don't know if you all ever check out or have in the past few weeks, and maybe it doesn't matter now if Aaron Rodgers gets cleared, but Brett Hundley's passing charts and next-gen stats, like almost everything is within 10 yards, and I would say over half or 60% of the passes are within 5 yards. So it's a lot of bubble screens, a lot of quick slant. It's a lot of getting the football out quickly and just trying to make a defender miss. And carrying and supporting an offense in that regard is difficult. Now, what they have been able to do with Brett Hundley under center is realize how good of a running game they have, right? And Jamal Williams, they nailed that evaluation last April. They talked about his pass protection. He's been great there. They've talked about how he's a punishing downhill runner who is physical and will pick up yards on contact. Yes, definitely he is that. And then they also nailed the evaluation of Aaron Jones, who's been the starter before an injury and now is kind of a backup for them, who can win in different ways than Jamal Williams. So add on, you know, Aaron Rodgers to that, which possibly, hypothetically, improves Jordy Nelson's play as well, who's been absolutely a non-factor since Brett Hundley took over at quarterback. This might be a new defense, or a new offense, I should say. And so for Ron and Steve Wilkes and company, I'm not sure how you game plan for this team on Sunday if Aaron Rodgers plays, because in many ways, I think you have to scrap and look over this offense under Brent Hundley, because it likely will look a lot different.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's a good point. I'm not going to ask you for a score prediction, Josh, but what do you expect to see Sunday between Panthers and Packers, assuming that Rodgers is in there under center? Because obviously there's going to be a lot of eyes and a lot of attention on that matchup.
Yeah, I would expect a big day from Devin Funchess. The Packers have, you know, allowed a lot of big plays to wide receivers all season long. And to that note, I would expect another receiver to emerge somewhere, whether it's Demir Byrd, Brent Burson, Russell Shepard, someone else, maybe even Greg Olsen gets involved this week. But that is where that Packers defense is susceptible. And so someone will have to step up other than Devin Funchess, because just one receiver usually is typically not enough. I mean, I would guess that the Panthers will win. They actually have an identity they've been able to, you know, establish for the last 5 to 6 weeks. But again, if Aaron Rodgers does return, it's a completely new factor that you cannot game plan for. And that is crazy to think of in the NFL, especially when one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time steps back onto the field. So shutting down the run will be important, and then rushing the passer, as always, is important with four. And the Panthers have somewhat been able to do that, but then Steve Wilkes and his aggressive blitzing have been really fun to watch as well.
Josh, appreciate your perspective. You have RotoWorld on your resume, so can you help me with some fantasy football choices this week for the playoffs?
Hey,
I've got some tough calls.
Hey, you must be doing pretty good if you're in the semifinals, so you might not want my help with that.
All right, well, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Josh. Good stuff, as always, from our friend Josh Norris over at NBC Sports and RotoWorld. And Brian, I'm going to kind of end that conversation by talking a little bit about Mr. Rodgers, of course, that we're going to probably get sick of hearing that name throughout the course of this week, just with all the talk and attention that's going to be on it. But it's understandable, of course. You're talking, as Josh mentioned, about arguably the best quarterback in the NFL. But what do you kind of envision happening this weekend when you've got a guy of Rodgers' caliber coming in to play in a game after such a long absence against a Panthers defense that's coming off a 6-sack performance against the Vikings?
I mean, interesting perspective from Josh, right? Talking about preparations for the game, you know, and what Brent Hundley has done, you know, trying to transition back into what Aaron Rodgers has done. I mean, he said it, you know, it's been a great job by their coaching staff and players to keep in the race. And we've seen Aaron Rodgers before in this situation. I think it was literally a broken collarbone as well before, where he came back right at the end of the season and propelled the team in the playoffs that looked like that wasn't going to happen. So, I mean, what do I expect? I think the Panthers are the better team. I know that I could see the same scenario playing out in some ways we just saw this past week that we've seen against the Patriots, so we've seen against the Lions earlier in the week. I think, you know, the Panthers have a good chance of taking a little bit of control of this game.
Yeah.
But then with the Aaron Rodgers factor, you could be holding your breath down the stretch again. Like,
sure,
just got to get one more stop to kind of hold them off.
I mean, look, you know the Packers are going to come in here feeling pretty good if they've got Rodgers back and the kind of juice that's going to give that entire locker room, right? I mean, that's understood. They're playing for their postseason lives. They can't lose, right? I mean, they've got to win out, essentially. And to get him back gives you, you know, that belief factor. Now, having said that, if I'm Packers management, coaching staff, even Aaron Rodgers, having to go up against this Panthers defense in the first game back would not be my first choice. Like I said, they're coming off a performance in which they were able to get to Case Keenum throughout, and if it wasn't for, you know, Keenum's elusiveness, they probably would have had him on the ground a few more times. But he took some hard hits,
right,
and you know this Panthers defense is all about affecting the passer. They're going to be they've blitzed everybody from start to finish. That's going to be no different against this Packers offense and potentially Aaron Rodgers. And look, part of what makes Rodgers really good is his escapability and
right,
his ability to kind of beat you with his legs from time to time. We know he's got a world-class arm. I mean, that everybody understands that. But he's also a guy that can be a dual threat at times, not in the same way as somebody like Cam, but he can make you pay for that. I just wonder what we're going to see in that regard from him, knowing that he's got to kind of protect himself, especially in a situation like this coming off that injury.
Yeah, what his mentality will be interesting, because he can beat you with his legs. I mean, I think obviously he can get out of the pocket and gain some yards. But I more think about obviously he knows how to get the ball out quick. He knows how to find, you know, go through his reads quickly, and you know he's great at just like small shifts within the pocket to kind of keep plays alive. So I don't feel like he necessarily gets hit that much, but obviously, yeah, he got hit to get injured in the first place.
Yeah.
So I mean, it'll be curious his mentality. Like, do they try to play it safe, thinking, you know, the kind of things we're talking about who you're facing and that you're just back from this injury? Or is it like, hey, our backs are against the wall, we're still alive, but we got to win out here. If I get hurt, I mean, I don't want to put it this way, but would he have a mentality, if I get hurt again, I get hurt again?
Yeah.
You know, this is why I'm playing, just to try to get us into the playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see how aggressive he is and the Packers are with him.
Yeah, no, definitely, no doubt. And look, this makes for another fun matchup here. We've had some good ones these past few weeks, starting with that trip down in New Orleans, didn't go the Panthers' way, and then hosting a big game against the Vikings they came out with. And now you got a desperate Packers team with Rodgers. A lot of attention going to be on this game. Certainly, you know, that plays maybe into it a positive for the Panthers as well. No letdown expected,
right,
coming in with all of, you know, Packer Nation and their hopes riding on Rodgers, and you know, all the talk kind of going to be centered on that. We'll see kind of how this Panthers team responds to
Max, I am listening to you, but I'll be honest, I'm trying to figure out how to segue into some food talk at the same time at this point.
I think you just did. All right, it's time for our next food for thought. And as we've been talking about this matchup against the Green Bay Packers, it's only right that we discuss some of Wisconsin's culinary institutions, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, this one hits home for me.
Absolutely.
As a Badger myself, went to school out of the University of Wisconsin in Madison, which you probably know by now. If you don't, now you do. But for me, Brian, man, I'm just so excited to talk about this. When you're talking about Wisconsin's culinary offerings, it's three things, really, that stand out. Obviously, it's the beer, it's the brats, and it's the cheese,
yeah,
and more so the curds. The cheese, yes, curds is the big three. I'm just going to throw those three out there, and what are your initial thoughts after?
Yes, yes, and yes. Those are my thoughts. I know you're a devotee of Spotted Cow. That's a Wisconsin
New Glarus Brewing. Okay. Fantastic up there in Wisconsin.
Yep.
It's pretty well known from the beer snobs. Somebody like Bill, who would certainly classify himself as one of those, would certainly be a fan.
Right. But, I mean, honestly, like, I'm going to tend more toward the curds and the brats.
Sure.
I mean, part of it is I've been to Green Bay a few times. I've literally walked on a lake in Green Bay where they were ice fishing, you know, coldest day of my life, I think. So I'm thinking about those, you know, warm your insides curds, you know. I mean, and you can't beat a good brat as well, but, you know, the curds are where it started. I mean, I love cheese. I love fried foods. I mean,
it's a great combination.
How can you go wrong? Yeah.
Before we get more into the curds, I do want to say this about the brats, and this is, you know, is something that would not go too over well with some of my Badger buddies.
Yeah,
I'm not a huge brat guy,
really,
to be honest.
Really.
That's, like, I think they're fine.
Yeah.
And some are much better than others. Every once in a while, there's like some fancy ones that maybe have some, like, you know, jalapeno peppers. Maybe there's some cheese in there. I mean, but on the whole, brats just not.
I agree
Not a
with
huge
you.
Fan.
I agree with the different quality and just your garden variety brat. By the way, I don't think they have veggie brats. I hope not.
I don't know.
But just your garden variety brat. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like with a hot dog too. But like, if you take the best hot dog, like, I'm just talking about just the hot dog itself, nothing around. You take the best quality hot dog and the best quality brat, I'm picking the brat.
I think you're right there. I think you're right there. It's got a higher ceiling,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so now back to the curds.
Yeah.
That's another thing where I feel like if you don't really know what a cheese curd is or haven't experienced it, I think a lot of people hear that and are like, ooh, like a cheese curd.
Right.
Like, what is that? Just the word curd, I think, turns people off
right,
a little
I
bit.
Can see
and they're maybe
that.
Like, I don't really, I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
But you're selling yourself way, way too short if you have that mindset going into it.
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't had curds, if you like, I love a high-quality mozzarella stick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's kind of the same thing. It's just a different part of the cheese, but it's pretty much, you know, fried cheese. It's usually, like, in balls.
Mozzarella stick gets you a little bit of a breading factor, though, which is different.
True.
Than the cheese curd, which is, you know, it's
I agree. I'm just saying I think you will like it.
Of course.
Right. It's in that, yeah. So I remember, now, have you ever had curds in North Carolina, by the way?
I don't think I've, no, that's true. No, I have had curds at, like, every once in a while I see it pop up on a restaurant menu.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Just seeing the appetizers, they've got, you know, some cheese curds. And I've tried them.
Yeah.
But that's, for me, it's one of those things where it is a unique item that is not nearly as good anywhere else.
Right.
In my experience. It's like when you have it in Wisconsin, or, and I will say Minnesota has pretty good ones too. Outside of those two areas, I just feel like it's not quite the same.
What did you think about the curds in the press box?
We were in Green Bay.
Yeah, in Green Bay. I mean,
those were good. They were not. I've had cheese curds that would blow those out of the water.
Yeah. They had a good spread up there, though. I remember they had an omelet station because it was an early game, and then they brought out the curds. I remember, actually, I really love those curds. I mean, I know you're more of a connoisseur, so you would have been more critical of them, I figure, but I think I may have gotten seconds. But I do remember Dave Gettleman not getting first. I remember, you know, we sat near him in the press box of that game, which happens sometimes, and he strategically decided to wait till halftime to get his curds, and I still remember the look on his face when he walked out, realized they had taken up the curds sometime early in the first quarter, and he had to go curdless.
Going curdless is just heartbreaking. And Dave's a guy who appreciates a good cheese curd.
Right, and any curd is better than no curd, obviously, despite your criticism. You weren't critical, but you said you've had better.
Yeah. And, you know, and look, a lot of different places are going to tout, you know, their burger offerings. It's another thing in Wisconsin, too, I just feel like brings it really, really strong. I think the whole dairy kind of element of the state, and obviously the Wisconsin cheddar factored in.
Saturated fat, anything that involves saturated fat, I feel like will be in there. I will say, I remember I went to the NFC Championship game in Green Bay the first time I went there in 97 when the Young Panthers played up there, and the Wisconsin Cheese Commission or whatever had, like, I just still cannot believe what I saw. They had, like, this cheese board, so to speak, of a sample of Wisconsin cheeses, and it was, like, as big as this room.
Yeah.
I mean, it was this insane tray with, like, 40 varieties of cheeses.
It smell like when you walk into that
room? I mean, there were some that I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. There was some, you know, some of those blue cheese, like, literally blue cheeses, blue in color that I wasn't going for. But, wow, I mean, I really didn't want to leave that space to go to my seat. It was pretty remarkable.
I'm proud of you that you did, though. I could have seen you just hanging out there for the rest of the game and mess around with the cheese offerings. But that's one of the things that, like, you know, I love good cheese. I totally, you know, have a lot of respect for Wisconsin and the way in which they carefully craft all these, like, mom and pop cheese shops and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, there are some cheeses for me where it's like, get this out of my
face. Right.
I have no interest.
I'm with you there.
So anyway, that was a fun food for thought segment. I'm glad we finally got to some of my Wisconsin. I've been waiting a long time for this episode because I knew we'd be able to hit it hard on the cheese curds. So this is one of those where it was like, okay, what food are we going to talk about? I know what we're talking about this week.
Can't go wrong with cheese.
You can't go wrong with cheese. And you always are you're pretty cheesy with your writing. I'll leave it right there. any last parting thoughts before we wrap this thing up, Ryan?
I'm hungry. That's one thought, certainly, after that. Can we have some curds for lunch? I don't know.
I wish.
Yeah, just, again, I mean, this December football, it's great to be relevant for the Panthers. Another game with a lot on the line, you know. I mean, the playoffs aren't even assured yet, as stacked as the NFC is, even at 9-4. They all feel like must wins, but that's fun.
Yeah, no, I couldn't have said it any better. Good way to close things out. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time on the Panthers Podcast.